It is a joy and a privilege to be among you again. Let's see. It's hard for me to believe that 6 years have passed already since I was here. And so many things happened in the 6 years. One thing that we learned, with ups and downs, with trials and victories, with advancing and sometimes feeling like, you know, making steps back, we learned that God is in control. We learn actually every day that it is His work and not ours. Before I'll show you some pictures, I don't think the last time I had that much time to tell you a little bit about how the Lord started the work in Romania. I was born and raised in communist Romania, in the last years of communism, the harshest out of the almost 50 years of that regime, when the dictator Ceausescu was copying the North Korean model of communism. Well, in 1989, December the 16th, the revolution started. My brother was born right on that day and year. And I was privileged to be raised in a Christian home where my father was an anti-communist fighter and for religious freedom. So we were used since I was just a little kid with the secret police patrolling outside and our home. And one of my earliest memories in life is me sitting on Dad's lap in one of these secret meetings in our home at candlelight. And when he and his friends, they came from gathered together to study the Bible, to pray and to sing, quite not really loud, but to sing God's praises. So one of my earliest memories, and actually the first sentence that I wrote on a piece of paper was, "Oh, how good it is to be with the brethren." Well, they thought that Raul was gonna be a preacher. Well, the Lord, it's interesting how He worked in my life. I was raised in a Romanian Baptist church, which the Baptist churches in Romania used to be Sovereign Grace Landmark Baptist churches. And most of the churches in Europe, not all the churches in England, but in Europe, the modern Baptist movement was started by a man named Gerhard Onken, who was baptized by a person that was sent, a preacher that was sent from a church in the States, and he knew J.R. Graves. Actually, J.R. Graves speaks about Onken in his book, Old Landmarkism, What Is It? And so the churches had a good start. About the 50s or maybe even 60s, some of them, because before the World War II, they got connected with the Southern Baptist Convention, liberalism started to creep in the Romanian Baptist churches too. And then communism came in 1946, and that kind of forced everyone together. And when we came out of communism in 89, it was, you know, a chaotic and confusing mess. The Lord saved me when I was almost 17 years old. Now, I grew up in this Baptist church and I loved to read the Bible. I grew up in a Christian home and I thank the Lord for that. But at that time, I loved to study the Bible. I loved to learn knowledge and information. I loved history. So I always I always wanted to ask certain questions that my Sunday school teachers wouldn't know to answer. So that was kind of my motivation to learn the Bible at first. And then I wanted to be the best, to win all the Bible quizzes, the trivias, and I was doing pretty good at that. Well, about that time, I started to compare myself with other people. And on the outside, everybody thought, you know, the Lord is really working in Raul, and here is this young man that wants to study the Bible, has this thirst for the Bible. I was comparing myself with others and, you know, always come out better than them. So I had a pretty good opinion about myself. And even though on the outside I didn't look like I was bragging, I was proud, on my inside, yeah, I was. Well, I was reading through the book of Romans, and I read that book so many times before. That was in 1998. Well, when I read that time, it was like I read it for the first time, because before I always, when I read about sin and sinfulness and God's condemnation and judgment, I was looking around me and I said, yeah, that applies to that guy and to that guy and to that guy, not to me. Well, that time it was like that book was written for me. So when I got to Romans 3:23, that all have sinned and came short of the glory of God, because I kept comparing myself with other people, it's like the Lord told me, you want to compare with someone? You know, Jesus Christ is the standard. He is the revealed glory of God. And it's like he put a standard. If you don't meet that standard, there's no way you can be pleasing to me. There's no way you'll be saved and come into heaven. Well, when I realized that, I got scared. God just brought down all my world. And I saw the uselessness of comparing yourself with other people. So that's when he really brought me down and saved me. But I was part of a church that was teaching actively against assurance of salvation. And they said that it is, you cannot tell whether you'll be saved or not at the end. It was a prideful thing to say that for sure I will be in heaven. Because they believe that you can lose your salvation. They are consistent Arminians. And I was struggling with that. And then we had a few young people in our group that wanted to study the Bible more than just socializing and singing in the youth meetings. So we met in homes, we tried to study the Bible, and somebody brought up the matter of predestination. Now that was toward the end of year 1998. We had no idea, because we didn't have books, we just had the Bible, and we were trying to figure it out for ourselves. So when this friend of ours asked about predestination, we didn't know what to say about it. We don't have the very word in the Romanian Bible. It's a compound word, which literally translated into English would be aligning things ahead of time. So we believe that because the Bible said about aligning things ahead of time, sort of like foreordination. But we didn't have the word predestination. So when the question was asked, we went to our pastor then and we asked him about predestination. So he said, we Baptists do not believe in predestination. That word is not in the Bible. Well, it was true that the very word is not in the Romanian Bible. So, well, we never heard anyone preaching about predestination, you know, from a Baptist pulpit. So, we don't believe in predestination. Well, we believe in foreordination because that is in the Bible. But, well, the Lord brought Brother Curtis in February 1999 in our area. Through a contact of a contact of a contact, or something like that, he got to come to visit a friend of ours from a neighboring village. So that friend introduced Brother Curtis to the pastors around. So this is how he got to preach in the church I was a member of then. And his sermon was Romans 8:28 and downward. So he was reading verse by verse in English, and the pastor was translating in Romanian, was reading from the Romanian version. So when he got to verse 29, whom he predestinated, and I was like, that word is in the Bible. It's in the English Bible. And, you know, for the first time in my mind, I could make the connection between predestination and aligning things ahead of time. It's the same thing. So me and my best friend, Aurel, he's my brother-in-law now and one of the other preachers in the church, we thought we really need to get in touch with this American. Our pastor is hiding something from us. He just lied to us. So we really wanted to learn more about predestination. Well, Brother Curtis left and we didn't get a chance to speak with him, to meet him. But in May, he moved with Sister Janet in that area. So my pastor didn't like his teaching, but he kind of wanted to bring him to preach every once in a while because he thought Americans have money and Romanians need money, so let's keep him close, but not too close. So he didn't want to translate for him, but he invited me. He asked me if I wanted to translate for Brother Curtis. And at that time, there were two things that I hated most in life: to speak in public and the English language. So here I was, if I were to say yes, to speak in public to, you know, some large congregations and, you know, to translate from English. But because I really wanted to get in touch with Brother Curtis, I said yes, though I didn't feel capable of doing that. So this is how the Lord brought us in contact. A few years later, the Lord called me to preach. Brother Curtis and Sister Janet were in the States at that time. And I began to study the Bible more. Well, the more I studied the Bible, the more things I saw wrong in the church I grew up in. So at one point, after preaching in the church, because they were going to send me to the seminary in Bucharest, after speaking with the board of deacons, because they're not congregational, they're hierarchical in their government, church government. After speaking with the pastor, I realized that I just cannot stay in that church if I want to serve the Lord with the knowledge he gave me, with the amount of truth that I understood then. So at the age of 20, I left the church. Everybody thought that I was crazy. Mom, she told me, you know, why can't you just stay in this church? Because all my friends were there. I said, you can believe whatever you want to believe, but, you know, just, you know, keep your mouth shut and stay here. You know, who's going to marry you now? Well, that's how mothers are. And I said, well, I just need to follow the Lord. I just cannot compromise. Well, one thing that I learned after that was, as I was studying the Bible and Brother Curtis gave me some materials, I thought, well, what are the basis of leaving a church? You can't just get upset over little things and leave. You know, you just don't have the right to do that. If it's something major, if it's something that relates to the faith and practice, to apostasy, yes, we are called out. But otherwise, we're schismatics, and I didn't want to be just a schismatic. So I had to try to determine whether I left for scriptural reasons or not. And I determined that that church, when I left it, was apostate. And I had to leave it. I just couldn't go back, even though all my friends were there. And they were forbidden to come even visit me. They would have been excluded if they ever talked with me. So I got two people that visited me at night. And one of them was Aurel to talk with me. And then we had several. I met several times with him, of course, after that. But I thought, well, if I left that church for being apostate, how was it when they baptized me? And that's like when somebody really hit me in the head. Because that was just 3 years before, and I had to say they believed the same things, the same errors, they practiced the same errors. So the next question was, am I really baptized? And I never thought about that before, because I thought I was honest. I was saved when I was baptized, but I never thought about an administrator having to have some qualifications. But when I left that church, I had to think things through. So it was a hard answer to give to myself when I said they were the same, so that means I'm without baptism. Now, I love Brother Curtis. He helped me so much, but I didn't know the church is here. And I thought, I don't want to jump from one wrong church to another. And I started asking him about the churches here. So I researched as much as I could. He gave me the Berea Baptist banners and other papers that would kind of help me understand, you know, what the churches are dealing with here and how they act and, you know, how they function. So in 2002, I came to him and I said, I do believe that the Lord, that these churches are the Lord's true churches. So I want to be part of them. He never put any kind of pressure on me. And so I was the first person that he baptized in 2002, in July. Well, we started meeting. So it was just three of us, Brother Curtis, Sister Janet, and I. So we started regular meetings, and There were months later, some others started coming. We bought our first printing equipment. And the first year, by great efforts, we printed like 10,000 booklets. And we thought that's huge amount. I mean, just for a few people and, you know, to distribute around. And the following year, we printed 19,000 and then 27,000 or something like that. But the Lord just increased and there was demand. Well, in the circle of churches that I left, the literature was forbidden. And people were even told to burn it when they find it. And some did. Some Baptists burned our literature. And it was forbidden everywhere. But the Lord brought more and more people, mostly through the literature, in contact with us. So in a few years, we were able to have constant meetings in Boksha, and then we went to Filiash, we were called there, we started having regular meetings there, and from there on, the work grew more and more. But looking back at that time, I see God's perfect timing and working things together. I mean, what would have been the odds for Brother Curtis to come to Romania to, there were 23 million people then, we're like 17 million now because a lot of them live abroad, but, you know, to the very place where we would make contact. You know, what would be the odds? You know, but I know that God works all things together and He is sovereign. And we've seen this on and on and on. I'll show you some pictures and then I will tell you a little bit more that about the work in more like a structured form. And I should have started with bringing you greetings from the church I pastor, Sovereign Grace Baptist Assembly of Boksha, Romania, from Brother Curtis, from, I don't want to leave anyone out, but Brother Matt Stepp and the church in Big Creek, Wayne, West Virginia, they send you greetings. Well, let's see. Okay, I hope you all can see the pictures. So this is where we are in Southeastern Europe. And Europe used to be full of sound churches. But in time, compromise, just in a generation or two, you know, Europe is so dark now that the closest church that we know of is in Ireland, Brother Bob Ellis' church in Cork, Ireland. Now, to drive there, it would take us 2.5 days. And I always encourage churches here. I know that we're small in number, small in membership, but it's such a blessing to have sister churches around you. And it's easy to take for granted, you know, such blessings. We stand alone there, and we are thirsty for fellowship, and we would be so thrilled to have other churches to fellowship with, and or other preachers to come. Most of the conferences we have is just us, you know, the preachers in the church. It's such a treat. I say that it's dessert for our souls when we have a visiting preacher like Brother Kenny Long or Brother Bob Ellis. He used to come. Well, Andy Proctor came last year too. So this is Romania. What is light green here is the European Union. So we are a border country of the European Union. Things started going better. We're still the poorest country in the EU. I don't know really to tell you about an average salary, because Romania is a land of contrasts. I mean, just for you to have an idea. Usually the prices are as high as here. There are things here that are cheaper than in Romania. The gasoline, the fuel price is basically what sets all the other prices around us, and we are at a record low of 4.50 a gallon. It was up to 6, you know, the regular. If you wanted higher grade gasoline, it was more. But we think that it's actually low, 4.50. Romania is a land of contrast. You find people, I mean, in the villages or rural areas or poorer areas, that they still make 300 or 400 euros a month, a month.
And in the cities, it's usually 800, 900, something like that. And if you work some, like in IT or something, you can make 1500 as an average. But we're still the poorest country in the EU, and that has advantages and disadvantages. One disadvantage that we really face is people moving westward to other countries to work. Now, it's an interesting situation in Europe because it's harder for men to find work than for women. Most Romanian women that work outside, they work in nursing homes or personal caregivers. So you have situations where the husband stays at home and has a job in Romania, and the wife goes outside temporarily, like a month at a time or 3 months at a time, or it could be even a year or more till she comes back home. And actually, I don't know a single family in Romania that doesn't have somebody outside to send money back in to support the family, because prices are so high and we just couldn't make it with just a regular income there. That's on the downside. On the other side, what we notice is that the higher the life standard, the less people see their need for God. And that's a sad situation. Instead of looking at our life standard as a blessing from God, as grace from God, we look at ourselves, this is what we accomplished. And we don't need God. So we see this, especially in the West. It's so difficult now to try to witness to a German, to a Swedish, to a Frenchman. While in Romania, still we're a pretty conservative society. And there still are some old traditional values. And that's also good in terms of family life, because we're very strong on traditional family. And while in the Western Europe, you know, you have gay rights, gay families, and all kinds of abnormalities like that. So this is where we live and work. This is the church now. Not everyone. Miriam is not in the picture. This is so as you can see, we're a small church too. Lord willing, we'll have another baptism. We had a baptism in June, and we'll have another baptism in once I go back home. There are several people that ask for to be baptized. The latest three is Brother John and Sister Mariana from Bucharest. They are kind of the first fruits of the mission work there. And their family is Orthodox. They live with her parents and relatives. So they got a lot of opposition. That's one place where I visited, and Mariana's mother asked me to leave premises, to leave the property. Yes, I don't want any repenter on my property. That's how they call us, repenters. But she got used with the idea, and I advised them to be patient so I can go there. I still get ugly looks. She still would open the door to just make her presence known. She's the boss there. But she still gives them a hard time, threatening to kick them out of the house. But I don't think that will happen. She's getting used with the idea, and we're praying for them. John has a great heart for the gospel. He knows from where the Lord brought him out. And he calls it fishing. And he always goes fishing. The first time I was there, he said, how about if we go fishing? And I said, I don't know to fish. I drown worms. I'm no fisherman. Well, he meant, let's go out and distribute literature. So we have a joke now that about, he's a fisherman. So let's see. These are some of the baptism services that we had over the years. Most of our baptisms are performed at the rivers. Not because we believe water washes away sins, but it's practical for us. So I'll skip this. As you see, we believe in total immersion. The preachers in the church, the families, this is Aurel Munteanu in the south with his wife Estera and the two kids. This is Aurel Miclea, my brother-in-law, Miriam's older brother, and his wife Eunice, and that's me and Miriam. So right now there are three preachers in the church. We have four mission points, and last year we went through a difficulty where two of our preachers left us, and we are praying and doing our best for their restoration. So if the Lord burdens your heart, I would appreciate if you would pray for them as well. We started having Bible conferences that grew larger and larger. And last year we reached the maximum number that we could invite, because we rent a place and it's limited number of seats. So we got to the 65 were the maximum. And then we started having two Bible conferences per year and also broadcasting live. And the first broadcast we had was like, I think over 200 people watched it that wanted to come and couldn't. We didn't even know that there were so many that wanted to come. But we tried to invite those that are closest to us, because these are not just fellowship conferences. They are teaching conferences. So every year we have a certain theme. Like this one was the church, universal or local. And then we had others like the authority of the scriptures. And all the messages would be a series on this theme. We started, this is the family of God, the kingdom of God, and the church of God, which I think it's a 101 in understanding church truth. So, and then we started the covenants 3 years ago, studying, like, first was from Adam to Abraham, and then Abraham to David, and this year was from David to Lord Jesus Christ. So, Lord willing, next year we got in the New Testament, in the New Covenant, and the fulfillment of the old one, and then we'll look further in the future. And once we get to Revelation, we'll kind of look back, and we'll see that all the history of humanity is actually the developing of the everlasting covenant made between God the Father, God the Son, and the Holy Spirit before creation. So that would be the design of the series. I preach 8 45-minute messages at these conferences. And because on the covenants, I'm the only preacher. They helped me, the other preachers, with organizing, with everything. But they said, we just don't feel able to tackle this subject. The rest of them, we all shared the preaching. Well, this is a map of Romania. The black stars mean that we have baptized people, their members. The red stars, I never thought that red star is a communist, but the red stars mean that this is our places where we have people close to us that study grace and church truth, and we visit them regularly. A mission trip around the country usually lasts us 10 days to 2 weeks before we get back home, and that means a trip planned at half-hour increments, you know, to be able to reach these places. Everyone would want us to stay for days there. And we come to places like this. This is in the east, in hill country, isolated village. It was unbelievable how the Lord worked things out for them to receive our literature. This is like 12, 13 hours away from us. We're here. And I receive a phone call from a man who asks me, he got our literature, and I usually ask them, how did you get in touch with us? Well, some find our literature thrown on the ground, others in the trash, and they recover it. Others, it was a case where a man left the Seventh-day Adventist church. His wife went back to the Orthodox church, and he was just walking on the streets that Saturday just after he left the church, and he said, Lord, where do you want me to go? So Aurel Munteanu and Brother Nicu, they were distributing literature in his area, but in another village. So this old lady receives the literature in another village, and she doesn't throw it away. She carries it all the way to this village, and when she sees him, you know, she says, here, son, you know, take this literature, you know, I don't need it. Well, she was just an instrument that God used to bring literature to him. So he has been in touch with us. He came to our conferences. And you probably know Stefan. I wrote about him a couple of years ago in the prayer letters. He just sent me a message asking about our fall conference. And he was very thankful for the help you sent him. He got our literature, and Brother Niku from Filiaj, the Lord, he told us this one morning, the Lord just burdens my heart to go by train to, you know, out of the way place in this city in eastern Romania. And it was a whole day trip. And he went and distributed literature there. We had no contact in the whole county. So Brother Niku went there, distributed literature, and left. Well, a few days later, Stefan calls me. He says he receives this literature and asked for more. It took 2 years to find out that he used to live on the streets. He was homeless. And he was living then, if you remember, on a former common bathroom of this ghetto communist one-room apartments. And he still lives there, but he was able to, with the help, he was able to fix it up some. And he came to the conferences. He came to Bucharest to the meetings there. We tried to help him find a job. And so he worked for a while in England and then in Netherlands, again in England, and he's back. He called me. So he's back from there. Most of the time, it just didn't work out. It was just like slave work. They barely made enough money to pay their way back to escape from these, greenhouses or fields that they were working there. All right. Some of the mission trips that we make, I just want to give you just a little about some of the people we meet to be an encouragement for you. This man here, he's a gypsy. We love this brother. He's almost paralyzed from waist down. Now it's almost 11 o'clock and I should stop. I didn't even speak about the print shop. He's almost paralyzed from waist down since 22. He was able to raise a family, quite a large one, by fixing accordions, repairing accordions. So every time we go there, he brings up the best accordion, and we sing. He listens over the phone, because, like many others, to our services, because they live too far from us. Many don't have transportation, so they would listen to us over the phone. When I preach, I have two, sometimes even three phones on conference calls in front of me. So people, not only in Romania, but in other countries, they listen to our services. This family here, they live in Australia. I don't know how our literature got to Australia, but they found it and they distributed literature in 7 important cities in Australia and even took it to New Zealand. This sister here, she's a member in the Romanian Academy. She was director of a hospital, famous doctor. You could see her on a national TV station. And she came in contact with us, and she's studying our literature, and she's very meek and humble and godly lady. She lives in Bucharest. This is Brother Kenny Long. He's too small in the picture to see him, in one of the castles in Transylvania. We went there to visit the castle, but also to deliver literature to a brother. We have a situation where many, they would like to join, but they don't want to be the first ones. And if there were others to make the first step, they would do it too. Well, we just pray for them, because it has to be the Lord impressing on your heart. And it's like stepping off a cliff. It's really, you sever family ties, you know, social ties. There's a high price, you know, of being part of the Lord's church. And sometimes we don't realize it. Again, we take it for granted. But it is a cost of discipleship. And some are just not ready to pay it. That man there, he would love for us to start something there that he would join, but he doesn't want to be the first. And it's the same with that brother in the east that I told you, like 14 hours away. He called me and he found our literature and he asks, where is the closest church that I could join? I said, well, the only one is in Boksha. It's 14 hours away. Well, he was disappointed. Well, can you tell me another Baptist church that you would recommend? Unfortunately, I can't recommend you any Baptist church. So he was pretty disappointed. And so, but just before he hung up, I told him, but the mission work can start with one. Well, he hung up, and I didn't even save his number because I didn't think he was interested. Well, 6 months later, he calls me, and he said, do you remember your words that a mission work can start with one? Would you be interested in coming to us, you know, and visit us? So we made several trips there, and he came to our conferences, so he's learning. And we have all kinds of situations like that. So once I believe that if we're consistent in what we do in working, we believe that the Lord will bring the right people. And there are many in Romania that are learning either grace or church truth or both. They always have easier options, not regarding church truth, but with grace, because now there are some Reformed Baptist churches and they don't require scriptural baptism. They don't require anything. You know, oh, you believe grace, just come to us. So it's a lot easier. And many that were taught by us initially, they, not many, but some actually, they went there. There are some that leave, go there for a while and then they leave. Sometimes the Lord uses that. You know, go to a false church, you know, that preaches some truth just to treasure more a true church. He sometimes works this way. Okay, I need to hurry a little. So these are people that we visit. This is in Transylvania. Let me just tell you about this man here. He is a former Orthodox bishop. The Lord saved. And he lost everything. His family turned against him. And on top of everything else, he was found with stage 3 colon cancer. So they removed part of his colon, part of his liver. And I made several visits to him on his deathbed, we thought. And so as we were praying together, and I tried to encourage him, he was able to come to our last conference. And actually, he came for a little while to the last conference in fall, in the fall when Brother Bob Ellis was preaching for us. And he went through a lot, through leukemia. So Brother Bob was a real, real encouragement to him. Well, he came to me after this conference and he said, Raul, isn't it true that the Baptists are the successors of the Anabaptists and Waldenses and Donatists? And so I said, yes, this is true, but how did you know? I gave him the Trail of Blood and other books, but since he was so sick, I didn't think he could read them. So he said, we were taught that. Now, I thought, isn't that sad that the Orthodox are teaching their students in the seminary that we are, I mean, who Baptists are, and Baptists don't teach that anymore. So what a sad situation. But he's, I thought I was going there to encourage him. Actually, many times he was encouraging me. This sister here will be baptized, Lord willing, in the next baptism. She's from Bucharest. Doina is her name. She's paralyzed from waist down since age of 4. And so the bottom half of her body is just like a child, you know. But she's a real encouragement to me. She lives in a home that it's just ready to fall on her. And at the second level, second story. Now, to get there, I mean, the staircase is so steep that I can only, and the steps so small that I can, you know, on the tips of my toes, I can climb up there. And, you know, but she always wants to come to church. And she distributes literature with all the occasions, you know. I need, when I take her on my arms, and then we very carefully, you know, I go down those stairs. Somebody has to prop me, you know, both on the way down and up. If I lose my balance a little, we're going to, you know, just roll down those stairs. But she wouldn't miss a service. And I was just brokenhearted when I saw her. Actually, no, I was encouraged to tears when I saw her. I mean, she wouldn't miss a service. She got off this couch where she spends most of her time on a little stool. So, you know, she was doing like this with a stool to walk, to move to the door at the head of the stairs. You know, for me to get her from there, bring her down, take her to church, and then bring her back. And last year, I believe she was in kind of a wheelchair accident. Another person with a handicap was in a power wheelchair and ran into her and caught her leg between the wheelchairs. And she had to go through physiotherapy, surgeries. But you know what she told me? She said, "Raul, I'm glad it happened to me." I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "There were other people in wheelchairs there, because that person just lost control of the power wheelchair." She said, "There were other people there that didn't know the Lord, and they would have cursed the Lord if that happened to them. I'm glad it happened to me." Now I thought, what an amazing testimony. You know, when this difficult thing happens, I mean, to a person that is so impaired and has so little, and to say, "I'm glad this happened to me," that's actually believing Romans 8:28. We preach the gospel from place to place. We try to reach communities door to door. It's a hard work, but it's amazing what a little church can do on a daily basis. I mean, if you do it every day, and our church members do this every day, we just load the backpack of literature and go systematically, because it's not just the preacher's job to share the gospel. It's everyone's job. We should remember that. So these are two of our church members distributing literature. Sometimes we find places, isolated places like this, Aurel Munteanu got in this village, not knee-deep mud, but close to. So he just took his shoes off and made it like that to the village. But everyone received two gospel booklets, actually. And if they were interested and wanted to talk more, they also received the New Testament. So we go isolated villages. As you see, we still have horses, but they're no pets. They're workhorses. They pull wagons. that's usually in the villages. And we go to big cities like this one. We covered this one. It's 300,000 people. We covered it door to door. And we're going to start the work here in Timișoara. This is where the revolution started, anti-communist revolution. Cluj, we covered a good deal of this. This is like between 300 to 400,000 people. We started in Bucharest. That's 2 million residents. Altogether, it's 4 million, the population. So we're going to be a while there. This is the largest field so far. But when I asked the church members to kind of compile a list, we just couldn't believe the figures. We covered door-to-door 111 villages and 5 towns up to 20,000 people. Population, one city of 300,000 and 2 cities in progress. Now, we're a small church. We're just 10 members. But again, it's amazing what you can do and how far you can get. Most of the church members don't have other transportation than the trains and buses and, you know, like that. But through the literature work, you know, we realize that we don't owe just to our nation the gospel, but to other nations too around us. So these are places in Europe that we made mission trips. One is Moldova. We made 2 mission trips to Ukraine, in 2 places to Ukraine. Sweden, Germany, several places, Austria, Rome, Italy. I will skip some of the pictures. These are, we send literature all over Europe, and people are waiting for us in Spain, in Belgium, in England, in all the places that we already reached. And then in the world, these are actually, we, except for Africa, where people are listening to us from Africa, but we didn't send literature there. We sent literature on all continents. So I made several trips to Germany. I'm going to just skip them now. I want to talk a little about the trip to Rome, where a Catholic priest, former Catholic priest, calls me. He finds my article on the ecumenical movement. The Lord saved him after he finished Institute of Vatican, valedictorian, master's degree. The Lord saves him, and he wants us to start work there and maybe at least once a month meet with, travel there, fly there and back. It's on standby now, but pray for this too. that's him over there and some other men from Rome that would be willing to meet with us. And last year I was to Peru. That's where I saw the importance of a literature work. Those people, they don't have literature. And the younger generation is drifting away because the older one was taught by the missionaries. But the new ones, you know, the universal church scheme is pretty enticing. And bigger churches, more programs, and you know how it's like. So a lot of the younger generation is drifting away. And they asked me to come and teach them church truth. They only had one Trail of Blood, one copy of Trail of Blood, and one of Why Be a Baptist. So they were amazed at the fact that we have so much literature to give people to study. Okay, the printing ministry, we were able to purchase two new equipments, which will save us a lot of time. Because right now, we have constant support, so we could cover what we needed, all the bases. But right now, we reached the top, like, we just can't do it anymore. And with a limited budget, it doesn't matter how big it is, you can only do so much. So we're thankful for the support we have and for churches contributing. This equipment will save us a lot of time because we cannot just stay in the print shop. We're needed out there in the outreach on the mission trips. So this is a fully automatic booklet maker. And basically after the booklets are collated, it does all the job, even counts them. So you just pick them up and they're ready to be wrapped and shipped. So it's going to save us a lot of time. There's just three of us in full time in the print shop. And again, when I looked at the numbers, I just couldn't believe it. So far we have, it's by now already over 750,000 copies printed. Out of them, 57,000 books and almost 400,000 gospel booklets. We're printing now in four languages. And I will show you some samples after the service. And we translated materials in 11 languages that are available on the internet. So this is where we are, and these are places in the world where we were able to reach, because we believe that just as Paul was commanded, he said, Lord commanded us, saying, I have set thee to be a light of the Gentiles, that thou shalt be for salvation unto the ends of the earth. So we encourage you to do the same. Be faithful in the place the Lord set you, and be faithful in the Lord's church. Faithful service to Him is blessed tremendously by our Lord. May the Lord bless you. I apologize for being too long. And if you have any questions after the service, you're more than welcome. I would answer them. And I will show you literature too. Thank you.